on this continent that long ago the British Empire stole from the people who once lived here. So much like her home, the parts without the shelters, without the Iron Dome. Maha El Masri's son had moved away. His children were evacuated soon after the day. Bombs began to fall again, 2023. And a few months later, the grandma of the family followed in their footsteps and flew to New South Wales with shocking stories of the slaughter. Horrifying tales, she hoped to leave that all behind her to start her life again. Australia gave her a visa, she flew here and then. Maha Al-Masri was asleep in her son's place when 15 police invaded their space. They gave her orders, they took her away to keep her in detention where she remains today. They had granted her a visa, but then they took it back. They say they investigated further, found it was character she lacked. They don't have to tell us what she said or did. They've just decided to take grandma from her grandkids. Maha Al-Masri can forever now remain in an Australian prison, indefinitely detained, unless she chooses to go back to the death that waits for all the Arab people living under the Zionist state, the same one that quite likely passed the word on down the line to destroy another family from the land of Palestine, which ASIO obeyed, no effort made to hide that Australia supports Israel's genocide. Maha Al-Masri grew up in the Gaza Strip.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, Dave, we were talking about your time with Vanguard in Los Angeles in regards to keeping it honest as U.S. slides into fascist dystopia. Your latest article up at This Can't Be Happening's Substack site, and your appearance in Jack Joyce's video expose that you can find up at YouTube. So your other article now, Dave, that I mentioned in the introduction, Britain Quits the Free World. And we've talked about this before. You've been spending time back and forth, being a bit of a transatlanticist yourself, living in England. And when you were on last, we were talking about your shock to come back to Trump's America for the first time, or the second Trump's America, or Trump's second America for the first time for you, and sensing a change in the tenor, something we've been talking about in the first half of the country. When you went back to Britain, did you get a similar shock of what's going on in Britain and its own quick march to a fascist dystopia?
Yeah, well, you know, it's not, I don't think it's quite as big a risk in Britain as it is here, oddly enough. I mean, we have our constitution, but it doesn't seem to have any meaning anymore. They have a tradition which may save them better than our constitution's going to save us, but we'll see. When I got there, it was October 1st. We left. My wife had a sabbatical for a year, 10 months in Cambridge. So we were in residence. And what I saw when I came there on October 1st was a country that had just in July that of that summer elected overwhelmingly a Labour prime minister and a Labour majority in Parliament for the first time in a long time. It was a historic victory because of the margin. It was so great that Keir Starmer, former chief prosecutor for the government, who did a heinous job of keeping Julian Assange in solitary confinement at the request of the United States, he was a former human rights lawyer, and he could have acted differently, but he acted terribly. At any rate, Starmer came in after having campaigned to fix the, you know, what was wrong with Britain, which was mainly his big thing was that the National Health Service, the gem of the of British social democracy, had been underfunded for decades. So, I mean, the staffing levels there are what they were 20 years ago, and the population is much greater, and the age of the public of the population is much greater. So the needs of the medical system are much greater, and they haven't accounted for that. So he said he was going to do that, and he said he was going to fix the pensions, which are shamefully low, and he was going to fix the schools, which are falling apart, and fix the potholes in the roads, which are almost as bad as in the U.S. And so he came on saying that. Well, and also renationalize the railroads, which are grossly overpriced and run badly. He then decided, because of Trump and because of the collapsing support for NATO and, you know, concerns about whether the U.S. would back, you know, countries that, you know, if the Russians were to invade, you know, the silly idea that they're going to invade Western Europe and try to conquer, create a new empire. He had to rearm Britain. And they started talking in terms of, you know, we need to get on a war footing. It was so ridiculous. I was going, what is happening here? And the result was, you know, Trump has been saying that the NATO countries need to spend 5% of their GNP on military spending, which works out to about 20% of their budgets. Right. And I mean, part of the reason Europe has a good social system in most of their countries is that they have very small military budgets. So Starmer was left with this, you know, he is cozying up to Trump. He said that they will get to 5% by something like 2027 or 2029. And they wouldn't be able to do that and also fund all these other social things that are really pressing needs. And instead, they were going to they're buying like 35 or 50 F-35s, the most expensive plane ever, weapon system ever designed, and doesn't even work. And he wanted the version that carries two atomic bombs at supersonic speeds with stealth technology, so it's a first strike weapon, and this is crazy. And I'm going, what's going on here? And then, you know, of course, they also have been supporting Israel's genocide in Gaza in the same way that the U.S. has been, and they play a very important role in Israel's IDF. They supply all their trucks and vehicles. They supply the parts for the F-35s that Israel uses, and that without which the planes will cease to fly pretty quickly. And so, you know, he said he was going to do all this military spending. And so therefore, unless they raised taxes, which they vowed not to do, they wouldn't be able to do both. And so he started slashing back his promises about funds for the NHS and about fixing pensions and paying for, you know, a bonus for people who, like what we call a child credit. They only give it for one child, and, you know, people wanted it for two or for no cap. And he originally said no. He had a backbench revolution, and they backed down on that. But the bad thing that's happened when we talk about police states is that Parliament, the Labour majority in Parliament, passed a bill that added, or a resolution that added the main protest organization that's dealing with the Palestine genocide, and that is Palestine Action. That group is a direct action organization. Rather than just standing around with signs, they take action of, you know, breaking into armaments industry and damaging machinery. Their main thing is painting red paint wherever they go. on walls, on inside the buildings. And what they did that got a dramatic response was they cut through the hurricane fence of a RAF airbase in Oxfordshire, and they went to two tanker planes that they learned had been used to refuel Israeli jets that were attacking Iran, and they painted red paint on those planes. So they were accused of that's also upset the parliament that they voted to classify Palestine Action as a terrorist organization. Now, they absolutely do not support violence. What they're talking about is not violence. Painting a plane is not violence. Even denting a plane is not violence. And cutting a fence is not violence. And in fact, I argue that they should get a citation from Parliament for exposing the incredibly lax security of the airbase.
Well, at the very least, but we know that that's not going to happen. And when you talk about Britain's support for Israel, the Akrotiri base in Cyprus has been running spy sojourns, and they deny giving the information to the IDF, but the IDF says different, and there's no other reason why they would be doing it that we could possibly ascertain. Britain is up to their eyeballs. This proscribing of Palestine Action as a terrorist organization comes under Britain's Terror Act 2000, before the Twin Towers, clearly. And it has five precepts. And as you described, that what the actions...
Well, it was originally targeting the IRA, and so that's what drove them to do it. And then they added, Al-Qaeda, and they added, I think, Islamic Jihad and stuff. But the bad thing, what's really bad about that law... And it has been called out repeatedly by civil libertarians and civil libertarian supporters in Parliament, is that it has a maximum penalty for being a member of these organizations of 14 years. But it also says that anybody who helps these terrorist organizations, so-called, is liable to 14 years in prison. So for Palestine Action, if you say... Even if you write, as I have written and many journalists have written in England, that Palestine Action is not a terrorist organization because it forswears violent action and terrorism. It doesn't kill anybody. It makes the news by these direct action things, much like Greenpeace does, and other organizations. Something more dramatic than marching and postering. And so that is really getting into the question of free speech, free press, free association, and not, terrorist issues. And so that's really dangerous. And nobody is challenging it in England successfully. I have an attorney who's just offered to take my case if I run into problems with that terrorist watch list thing again, because Trump is a lot more serious a problem now than it was back before, when I didn't really need to worry about it. And that's Gareth Pierce, who's the leading civil liberties attorney in England. She's a miraculously brilliant lawyer. And she's doing, I saw she's taken the defense of Palestine Action. So they've got the best lawyer they could have.
Well, and people and famous people are standing up. I saw an actress and a performer, a singer, during one of her, I've forgotten her name, but during one of her performances, she stopped and said, declared that she supported Palestine Action, where even saying something like that out loud in a public forum like that can under the infamous Section 12 of Terrorism Act 2000 can be construed as supporting a proscribed terrorist group. But even though Palestine Action doesn't tick off any of the five boxes required to be put in that group by the law itself, they are there nonetheless. The interesting thing, I don't know if you're aware of this, Dave, but the actual airplane that was attacked in the example that you cite, and Palestine Action has done many more than just that one action, but in that actual case, it turns out, and this was thanks to another guy, a reporter, Craig Murray, who is no stranger to being assailed by the authorities. His article, Dystopia UK Genocidal RAF Squadron Targeted by Palestine Action, is owned by a hedge fund. It turns out that the Polygon Global Partners LLP owns the airplanes and leases them to the RAF, so that the planes aren't even English or British property or British planes. Their military gear is being leased by these trans-global corporations.
Yeah, this is the definition of fascism, is when the corporate world gets together with the military and the government, and it's all one. And that's what's happening in the U.S. with that, you know, Thiel and his outfit.
Oh yeah, Palantir,
right? You know, this is what's going on in the U.S. is the same thing. This joining of billionaires and their enterprises with the military and with the government, so that it's a seamless web of repression, and that's what's happening.
So now in Britain, they're traducing the great tradition of the Magna Carta and the freedom of speech and the freedom of the press and the freedom of assembly and the rights to protest. I remember in England, it was always deemed a mark of a high civilization that any Briton could walk down to Hyde Park in London with a soap crate and stand upon it and voice his displeasure with any aspect of the kingdom without fear of reprisal. Now, as I said in the introduction, one fellow was arrested last week under Section 12 of this Terror Act for holding up a newspaper front page that had the words Palestine and Israel terror upon them, although not in a single sentence, but they were just contained on this one page, and was arrested.
Did he do it at Hyde Park?
I don't know if he was at Hyde Park or not.
You're making me think I should have gone down to Hyde Park and said something, and you know, because try to stand to keep it alive. That one of the things about England is that they have this tradition in common law of jury nullification, and a lot over the years, a lot of people in anti-war protests, anti-nuclear protests, and stuff since World War II have actually been let off by jury nullification, and the government is really upset about it. And so what they are doing with the Palestine Action group is the latest thing that happened in England, and nobody paid much attention to it. It seemed minor. Is one of the ways Starmer's government wanted to reduce their expenses so that they could, you know, squeeze a little money out for the National Health Service or something, was they said that they're no longer going to give everyone the right to a trial by jury. They said, you know, that we just can't have that many trials going on. They take too long with a jury. We need to do just trials before judges for minor cases. And so they said, like district courts, you wouldn't automatically be able to get a jury, and for lesser crimes. Well, guess what? They're dealing with the case of Palestine Action in a lower court that can't have a jury. Mm-hmm. So now that they've taken away the right to demand a jury in a trial like that, I guess what it'll mean is that there are limitations on the amount of the penalty that can be assessed in that those courts. So maybe that's a good thing, but they don't. There's no chance of jury nullification if there's no jury.
Well, that the cynic in me says that this is to accommodate mass arrests, and the next thing they will be mass trials of entire swaths of people who may not be able to cram into the burgeoning private prison systems.
And then they won't be able to. They won't be able to have someone like Gareth Pierce make a case that will convince the jury that there's no real crime committed.
Gareth Pierce's name sounds familiar. Was she involved too with the Assange case?
Yes. Yeah. She was the junior attorney for a guy named Ben Bernberg, who I'm not sure whether he's still alive either. He did suffer from dementia, and he was Ted Hall's attorney. That's how I stumbled onto Gareth Pierce. She was very helpful with us in getting, you know, files from, you know, at the time they represented Ted Hall.
You write in your article, and again, the article is Britain quits the free world, in scare quotes. Britain, with its legislative action labeling Palestine Action as a terrorist organization, has made the biggest move towards the abandonment of free speech and association, but the U.S. may soon overtake it in the race down that dark path. Do you worry, Dave, do you plan to go back to Britain anytime soon? But do you worry that what you've written at This Can't Be Happening's Substack site can be used against you can trigger an invocation of Section 12 if you land in Britain, that they would try to pull something like that if you were criticizing Kid Starver or some such?
It worries my wife, and she worries about it here in the U.S. too. We are looking at possibly trying to figure out a way to move to Britain and work there. Partly because I have a daughter who teaches at Oxford and has become a Brit, married to a Brit, and has my two grandchildren who are, you know, now dual citizens, 4 years old and 17 months old. And so it would make sense for us to be there. My wife is very happy at Cambridge. And, you know, I'd be very happy in Britain. I speak the same language.
And sort of.
you know, that's a possibility, but it wouldn't be for at least a year. If I did get hauled in, ironically, if I did get hauled in, the U.S. did it, I would apply for asylum. And she said, well, that would be good. Make an interesting argument. You know, you probably could get it. But then, you know, for the English one, I'd have the same problem. I'd have to go to the European court and apply for, you know, asylum in some European country.
If you tried it in Canada, the asylum system here has been essentially frozen under layers of bureaucratic attention to modernize it and to fix problems with it, under the rubric in the press of being a immigration problem, when asylum is not immigration, but nevertheless.
Yeah, right.
This is what's happening in this country. I imagine Britain's probably got something similar.
In the U.S., they're violating all the laws about international law regarding asylum, because they're turning people around and sending them back to Mexico. You're not allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. You have to take it from the person that appeals for it and deal with it in that country. And they're not giving people a hearing. They're just deporting them.
Well, Dave, we're fast running out of time, but before we go, you and I have been talking over the years for more than 20 years now. When your book came out, This Can't Be Happening, and we were talking about the Bush ascendancy, the George W. Bush ascendancy, and with the Bush and Cheney and Iraq and all these things, and the horrible direction that American democracy was headed in. Then
and Obama.
Well, that we started talking before him. He seems to be starting to have some troubles coming his way, if the papers be believed.
Yeah, that's payback.
but if all of these tarantulas start turning on each other once they're out of office, that can make for a pretty interesting late Roman Empire scenario where presidents aren't allowed to retire. They're, you know, retired Julius Caesar style. But if we compare those, the threat that you wrote about in your book back then and what we talked about over those terrible years of the destruction of Iraq and today, I mean, how do you weigh the then and nows of it?
Well, it's obviously a lot worse now than before, because now you've got a government where the president is claiming that he has the right to revoke your citizenship. And, you know, citizenship has always been like the final defense, because it's American citizens and residents even of the United States who aren't citizens are supposed to be protected by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The only ones who don't get the full protection of it are illegal immigrants. And even they get some of the rights protected by the like cruel and unusual punishment. How the hell can did you see the story about the immigrants in a prison in Florida being run by the state of Florida? Were the men were required to eat their food from a bowl on the floor while having their feet chained and their hands chained behind their backs. So they had to kneel and eat from the bowl like a dog.
No.
Yeah.
I would say that maybe that sounds like a pre-shadowing of Israeli prisons coming to America.
Yeah. And that's, if that's not cruel and unusual punishment, I mean, why the hell do you have to be chained and handcuffed inside a maximum security prison, mm-hmm. and then have that done to you when it's time to eat your food? It's just appalling that could even be contemplated. But that's where we are in this country. It's the whole notion of punishment in the United States under the Trumpian administration, and also going back to Clinton. With his criminal reforms is punishment, not what they call
correction.
We still call prisons correctional institutions. They're not about correction. They're about
tyranny. It's punishment. It's the hallmark of a tyrannical reign, which is what we seem to be going, and maybe those are the baby steps that we've been missing along the way, going back more than 25 years as we celebrate with Britain, as they celebrate the 25th anniversary of their terror act there, 25 years of terror and counting. Dave, we're out of time. I urge people to go to Dave's site, thiscan'tbehappening.substack.com. Check out his articles and check out his link to the appearance in Jack Joyce's YouTube video. I've seen it titled in two different ways. He titles it, Jack does, Dare, the Real Reason Cops Taught You About Drugs. That's at YouTube. And you've got a link to it as Dare, how billionaires put cops in 75% of the nation's schools. Very interesting and very illuminating, given what we're going through now, to see they connect these dots, these tiny baby steps that have led us into the crib, so to speak. Thanks a lot, Dave, for coming on, eh?
Thanks a lot, Chris.
That's all I got for this week. Until the next time.
Police invaded their space. They gave her orders. They took her away to keep her in detention, where she remains today. They had granted her a visa, but then they took it back. They say they investigated further, found it was character she lacked. They don't have to tell us what she said or did. They've just decided to take Grandma from her grandkids. Maha Al-Masri can forever now remain in an Australian prison, indefinitely detained, unless she chooses to go back to the death that waits for all the Arab people living under the Zionist state, the same one that quite likely pass the word on down the line to destroy another family from the land of Palestine, which ASIO obeyed. No effort made to hide that Australia supports Israel's genocide.